Hello and welcome to the Thursday, October 8th edition of Juno Afternoon on KTOO. We've got a great show. Jack Dalton's here. He's here to talk about his new play, Assimilation, with his whole cast. That's happening at Egan tomorrow. We'll chat with the Juno Alpine Club and the Juno Co-op Preschool and, of course, Nancy DeCherney with Arts Up. Stay tuned.
This is National Native News. I'm Antonia Gonzalez. There was something unique at rallies across Canada recently to mark the 10th anniversary of a National Day of Remembrance for missing and murdered Indigenous women and girls. Red dresses were displayed to honor and represent those who are gone but not forgotten. More from Dan Karpinchuk.
The red dresses were on front lawns, hanging from trees and fences, and featured in rallies and marches across the country. The Red Dress Project is the brainchild of Métis artist Jamie Black from Winnipeg. She created the project 5 years ago and has since collected hundreds of donated red dresses.
An empty garment of clothing kind of operates as a marker of those who are no longer with us.
Black wants all Canadians to display a red dress to show support for Indigenous women. One person who did is Bernadette Smith, whose sister disappeared 7 years ago.
Red is a very powerful, color. It's a very powerful image. And when I look at it, I think of beauty, but I also think of, the blood that possibly somebody's carrying on their hands as well.
The Red Dress Project does not call for a national inquiry into the issue of murdered and missing Aboriginal women. The artist, Jamie Black, says she's skeptical that government legislation or an inquiry would change things for Indigenous women. For National Native News, I'm Dan Karpinchuk.
A Massachusetts college, which planned to liquidate about $1 million of its Native art collection, has called it off. The pieces collected by missionaries are from 52 tribes, including items which may be sacred. Now the country's oldest theology school could face penalties in a federal investigation. KTOO's Elizabeth Jenkins reports.
Over the summer, the Andover Newton Theological School, or ANTS, quietly decided it would sell 80 pieces of its Native art. But it didn't stay quiet for long. The museum that's housed the collection since the 1940s alerted hundreds of tribal leaders. Rosita Worrell, the president of Sea Alaska Heritage Institute, says these are more than inanimate objects.
The halibut hook has spiritual dimensions to it. And in this particular case, we have a halibut hook with a wolf.
The halibut hook is Tlingit, and Worrell believes the school also has a Southeast Alaska shamanic doll. And under federal laws, if a college or museum receives federal funds, these items are subject to repatriation. Peabody Essex Museum President Dan Monroe says the school was confused from the jump. It didn't file an inventory or summary providing tribes with information, and the college assumed the museum could cherry-pick what was subject to the law. Only tribes can.
The museum, ANTS, no other party can actually make those identifications.
In 2009, Monroe says the Onondaga tribe asked the school to give back a wampum belt. The school denied its request. As a privately funded college, it thought it wasn't subject to the law. But here's the problem with that. The students pay with Stafford loans. Martin Copenhaver, the school's president, said he was too busy to comment for this story. But he forwarded a letter. It said, "We will proceed to repatriate artifacts if feasible and appropriate ways can be found to do so."
I mean, that set up a red flag to me.
Rosita Worrell again.
If feasible and appropriate. What does that mean? It should be if it complies with the law.
Andover Newton Theological School did reach out to the Onondaga about the belt. Southeast Alaska tribes are still waiting. In Juneau, I'm Elizabeth Jenkins.
In New Mexico, the Albuquerque City Council approved a resolution Wednesday declaring the second Monday of October as Indigenous Peoples Day. The move follows other cities which have done the same, including Lawrence, Kansas, and Seattle, Washington. The advocacy group, the Red Nation, which was instrumental in getting the Albuquerque resolution passed, is hosting events including a march and rally on October 12th. I'm Antonia Gonzalez.
National Native News is produced at the Annenberg National Native Voice Studios in Albuquerque, New Mexico by Kawanic Broadcast Corporation, with offices in Anchorage, Alaska. Funding is provided by the Corporation for Public Broadcasting, the Annenberg Foundation, and the Ford Foundation. Support for law and justice-related programming provided by Hobbs, Strauss, Dean & Walker, LLP, a national law firm dedicated to promoting and defending tribal rights for more than 30 years. More information available at HobbsStrauss.com.
Darlin Gold, Jimaho Kulugu Yut, Bijithia Gat, Gushok Fim, Weeh Beam to Awat Digni, Jalang Nako Raskata Kainagun.
Native Voice One, the Native American Radio Service.
Welcome back. You're listening to Juno Afternoon on KTOO. Jeff Brown is the producer and engineer of the show. He's at the board. I'm Joan Pardis, your Thursday host. It is raining outside. It's going to be heavy at times. Tonight, it's going to still be raining, and tomorrow it's going to get very windy. We're at the tail end of a hurricane coming from Hawaii, or we're getting the tail end or the front end, but not, you know, or southeast Alaska. What's hurricane winds? It's only going to be 45 miles per hour. That's nothing for us. So anyway, we'll get more weather later in the show, but right now it's 50 at the airport, 51 downtown, and 49 in the Mendenhall Valley. In the studio with us right now, we have Jack Dalton and the cast of Assimilation. They are performing tomorrow night at Egan, evenings at Egan at 7 o'clock at the university. Jack is a professional storyteller, actor, writer, and teacher. He's a Rasmussen Foundation Fellow, been honored by the World Indigenous Peoples Conference on Education as a distinguished dignitary. He received the first expressive arts grant from the Smithsonian Institute's National Museum of the American Indian in 2009, and this is one of his six plays. And Assimilation, I saw a little video for their Kickstarter campaign, because tomorrow night is going to be the first of the 2015 tour. And instead of me talking about the play, let's Jack talk about it. But before, Jack, hi, welcome to the show. Can we introduce everyone? We have four other people here. Can you guys just say your name and where you're from? That'd be great.
I'm Marion Wesley. I'm originally from Lake Iliamna.
Who is Leonard, originally from Chivac?
I'm Kendall Mann from Atlanta, Georgia.
I'm Travis Draper, also from Atlanta, Georgia.
All right, and then Jack Dalton.
Hello.
Okay, so Jack, tell us about Assimilation.
So Assimilation came about in 2010.
We're talking about the theater piece.
The theater piece. Oh, yeah, the theater piece. Yeah. The play Assimilation came out in 2010 when Sandy Harper at Cyrano's Theater Company in Anchorage asked what I was working on. I said, well, I have this idea about a play in which the boarding school system is flipped, and the natives are running the boarding school, and the whites are being assimilated into native culture. And she said, let's do it. And so then I had to write it. And it was a really interesting process in writing, flipping the script like that, but also how do you make the assimilation process that happened historically in boarding schools in Alaska and across the United States and around the world, countless young indigenous people stolen from their homes and forced into boarding schools, oftentimes abused, neglected, and that sort of thing. How do we make it relevant to the modern day and to, in flipping the script, making the school a Yupik school and have it be the assimilation process be real? You know, why, you know, are white savages because of the capitalism and the, you know, the fact that, that religion is not as strong as it used to be. So maybe we are godless and that sort of thing. And then making the Yupik culture, the better culture and the reasons why for it. So that it, the assimilation process into the Yupik culture is actually very realistic.
Yeah, and then I saw you were doing a Kickstarter campaign, so I saw
yes.
a video and I saw a little clip, and we're actually going to get a clip live here, like a vignette, not a clip, live. But when you did this in 2013, I saw that Chief Fred Johns stated that at a panel discussion, and we're going to talk about the panel discussion, that, you know, quote, I've never cried for white boys before, but I could tell you I knew each character in this play. Everybody in Alaska should see this play. It's time to heal this wound in others. And I think from what I saw from the Kickstarter, what you're talking about is you want to start the healing process and take this out of the shadows and really talk about it, and that this is one of the ways by flipping it it's a way to maybe make it universal.
It makes it universal. One of the issues I've come across in my life is talking with people who either, A, don't even know the boarding schools existed, which is a lot of people, and others, again, mainly white people, who say, well, I didn't do it, so why should I feel bad about it? And it's just like, well, the way things work societally is, you know, when you are a part of a culture, you represent that culture. And if things happen in the past that had to do with that culture, then there is a sense of responsibility for it. And my hope is that the dialogue will help all Alaskans realize that this is a shared history that we all need to heal from. The Native people have definite healing to do, but I think a lot of non-Native people, a lot of white people, don't realize the guilt and the pain that they are carrying with them, and they don't realize it until they see the play. And the nice thing about the play that we've discovered with Native elders is who went to boarding schools and were abused is that seeing the play doesn't reopen the wounds for them. Because it's flipped, they're not seeing themselves being abused. They're seeing the white boys being abused, and that makes it a lot easier for them to open up about it and not be re-traumatized by it.
Okay. So when people go to Egan tomorrow at 7 o'clock and they're going to see the play, and then afterwards, you want to talk a little bit about the panel discussion, and then we'll go right into that vignette that we'd like to do since we have the cast here in the
yeah.
studio.
So the panel discussions really are difficult community dialogues. It's about everyone who's there, Native, non-Native alike, talking about this shared history and each community deciding for itself, how do we want to proceed as a community to start this healing process? For Native people, it's really about just talking about it because it's something that's not talked about, which I think Louise could speak to that as to why she wanted to play the part. For non-Native people, I think it's really about recognizing that this history happened and therefore how can we need understanding. We need recognition. Like, wow, our white people did this to you in history. I'm really sorry for that. And it's amazing how just that recognition, just that that acknowledgement of history and a sense of responsibility for that history can really help a lot.
Okay. Well, you mentioned Louise, so let's go to Louise. And you were saying that she could speak to what part was.
She's playing Elder in the who's the headmistress of the boarding school and is quite tyrannical.
Is it fun?
It's really fun. But I feel like I have to apologize every time I say anything to the boys.
Seem pretty friendly. I think you're doing okay. How did you become a part of this play?
Well, I heard it from. I think we were at the state fair when I mentioned to him that I had seen an ad for, what was
auditions.
It? Auditions. And I asked, is it still going on? So we did it at the state fair, and he said, you want to be an actress? So I said, yeah.
And how has the experience been for you?
I remember, you know, like being punished for speaking my Chupik language, but not really realizing that it was that for that.
So did you go to a boarding school?
Yes.
Oh, why? So this must be like almost full circle. I'm not even sure if that's
yes.
the right
Yeah,
term.
But I was telling Jack that I am so glad that this is going to be on, you know, because we never really talked about those days.
Is it just kind of taboo? It's just not talked about?
It's a traditional thing for our cultures not to talk about bad things, which is interesting because in the past it was a survival mechanism. But that survival mechanism from, you know, pre-contact times is very dangerous nowadays because the traumas are so severe. If we don't talk about them, we actually are increasing the danger to our people. In fact, in my village of Hooper Bay just last week, there were 3 suicides, and both Louise and I are related to the people who committed suicide. So it's so important to talk about these issues and bring them to the light. And that's why we're doing the play, is to bring it to as many people as possible so that we can recognize that this is the history and how can we heal from it.
Well, I'm so sorry for your loss. That's tragic. Let's go to the vignette.
Sure.
Okay. So as I said, as you met everybody, if you're just joining us, Jeff Dalton and the cast of Assimilation, which
Jack,
is a...
Jack Dalton. You said Jeff Dalton.
Oh, my goodness. Jack Dalton.
It's
I am
okay.
So sorry.
Is
here. They are doing the play Assimilation at Egan tomorrow night at 7 o'clock. It's the first of their Alaskan 2015 tour. And here's a little piece from it.
Yes, Michael.
Because we too, forgetting who we are?
Almost, Michael. The correct way of saying it is because we all have forgotten who we are. You're doing very well. Just remember that when you are speaking of more than one or two people, use the all form of the pronoun. I is one person, then there is we two, then there is we all. This means there is more than one or two. Pronoun form, boys. Remember the correct pronoun form.
We all know that.
Oh, so you one do speak. See, Michael, it's the you one form of the pronoun.
English don't got the two of you kind of words. It being difficult, teacher, I'm sorry. Too many seals.
That is okay, Michael. I know you're trying your best. I'm very proud of the one of you.
Thank you. Oh, thank the one of you.
You really are stupid, aren't you?
Paul, be nice.
Yes, you, the one of you, be nice.
Paul, why have you said nothing for 4 moons, and now before Raven can beat a wing, you are speaking fluent Yupik?
You, the one of you, speaks with fluent?
I do not speak Yupik. I speak Inuktitut. Yupik is just a backwards dialect of the language of the real human beings.
Where did the one of you learn this language?
When your white father is a globalist and owns the largest energy company in the Arctic, if you're his son, you learn Inuktitut.
That is impressive.
That's a gold poop waste of time.
Be it one gold poop, or two gold poops, or many gold poops.
You're lucky.
The one of you.
The one of you are lucky.
Lucky? How am I lucky?
Wait, one of I? How many eyes?
How am the one of I lucky? We're smarter, we're faster, we have a better understanding of the universe than any other race on the face of the earth, but now we've been relegated. Yes, I know how to use that word. Relegated to be second-class human beings.
Well, if you look at what the whites tried to do, you did it to yourselves. Tried to conquer the universe, and only ended up conquering yourselves.
Are you sure you're from around here? What kind of Yupik interrupts someone speaking?
I went to school in Kanzhou.
That may as well have been Hong Kong. You picked the worst of, picked up the worst of their habits. Kanzhou people interrupt themselves.
One, or two, or many Kanzhou. Joe? With Jew people?
If you're going to corral a bear, learn how among the bears.
You're clever.
As are you.
I'm just not real.
You are white.
Maybe I'm a white in real parka skins.
Only a white would think that being clever and saying big, real people words would make them real.
Only a high-flying real person would think random actions of history make them better than people who really are better.
Only whites would eat their own houses and blame it on the random actions of history. Whites.
You? The one of you got that, Michael.
The one of you?
The one of you are very clever.
You, the one of you, you are very white.
We're not finished yet.
Adam, I admire you.
Wow, that was great. If you're just joining us, that's the cast of Assimilation. It's tomorrow night, 7 o'clock, and Jack Dalton's play kind of turns things on the ears. So Native Alaskans are in charge of the boarding schools, or indigenous people, and then the whites are the people who have to assimilate.
Yeah, and in the world of the play, the Western civilization has crumbled, and the indigenous people of the world are now in control. And so pretty much everything in the play is things that have happened in history or happening now. So there's references to drugs being grown in the Midwest. I think there's a line that says, you know, they could be growing corn to eat, but instead they grow white dust crops for profit. So it's the same, what do you call it, the same indictment that people make about Afghanistan or Colombia or places like that, that say, oh, well, you know, they could be feeding themselves, but instead they're growing drugs. And those are just, what do you call it? My brain's going blank. I'm so tired.
What, the dystopian?
Yes, it's very dystopian. And what is it? Blanket statements about other cultures? Prejudices. Yeah.
I had many different words throwing through my mind. So, Jack, one last thing before we go. That was great. And as I said, we have the whole cast here. They'll be there tomorrow night at Egan, 7 o'clock. Check it out. So I want to talk to you about your name. Okay.
Okay.
So I did a little research before we met, and do you want to say your Native Alaskan name and what it means?
Or well, that's really interesting because Louise and I both have the same Yupik name,
and
So it's Chupchok.
And what does it mean?
It means the hollow part of the grass or a funnel.
Okay.
Yeah, and so the idea is that to our culture, the best you can possibly be is a funnel, and so that spirit comes through you, and the more pure you are in that intention, then the less stickiness there is, and the more pure the energy can come through, and the spirit can come through and work in the world.
And is it unusual that you would have the same name?
It's a little unusual, and we also share the name with Marie Mead, who's a very well-known Yupik elder as well. So, and all of our...
We're all related.
Yeah.
And we live, our villages are close together.
Yeah. So my grandfather is actually from Kasunak or Chivak, and that's how Louise and I are related and how Marie Mead and us are related. So we're from the Delta. Everyone's related in the Delta.
Right. 3 degrees of separation in Alaska, mm-hmm. which is why it's really important to go see this play,
yes.
Assimilation, tomorrow, 7 o'clock at Egan. Thank you so much for coming in. We're going to take a short break. We'll be right back.
And here is the Writer's Almanac for Thursday, the 8th of October, 2015. It's the day that Christopher Columbus reached the New World, 1492 on this date. One of the sailors on the Pinta sighted land and island in the Bahamas. They'd been at sea for 10 weeks from Palos, Spain, Santa Maria, the Pinta, and the Niña. Columbus thought he had reached East Asia when he sighted Cuba. He thought it was China. When they landed on Hispaniola, he thought it might be Japan. He made 4 expeditions to the New World during his lifetime, and his discovery made Spain the wealthiest, most powerful nation on earth. It's the birthday of the poet Philip Booth, born Hanover, New Hampshire, 1925. Grew up on the coast of Maine, where his ancestors have lived for hundreds and hundreds of years, has his office in the house where 5 generations of his family lived before him. He said, almost all my mother's ancestors, my grandparents, great-grandparents, great-great, and so on, are buried in the cemetery here. In the November of the year, I often go and look at their graves and see their names and the years carved on them. It gives me a very pleasant and not at all morbid sense of the relations, the relationships that one has with a place. It's the birthday of the comic book writer Harvey Pekar, born in Cleveland, 1939. His father was a Talmudic scholar who supported the family working as a grocer. The kid was smart, but he dropped out of community college, got a job as a file clerk at a VA hospital, spent his free time reading books and collecting jazz records, owned about 15,000 at one time. And it was through record collecting that he became friends with the comic book artist Robert Crumb. Pekar complained to Crumb that nobody wrote comic books about real people and their ordinary struggles, and so the two of them set out to do that. They wrote American Splendor. Crumb did the art, and Pekar wrote the dialogue. American Splendor, the first ever autobiographical comic book series. First one came out in 1976, published a new issue every summer. Wrote about going to the supermarket and about his co-workers at the office and losing keys and dating girls and getting married, buying a house, going through cancer treatment, and so forth. Harvey Pekar, who said, "I wanted to write literature that pushed people into their lives rather than helping people escape from them." Here's a poem for today by Ted Kooser, entitled Student. The green shell of his backpack makes him lean into wave after wave of responsibility, and he swings his stiff arms and cupped hands paddling ahead. He has extended his neck to its full length, and his chin, hard as a beak, breaks the surf. He's got his baseball cap on backward as up he crawls out of the froth of a hangover and onto the sand of the future and lumbers heavy with hope into the library. Student, a poem by Ted Kooser from Delights and Shadows, published by Copper Canyon Press, and used by permission here on the Writer's Almanac. Supported by TIAA CREF, a global financial company dedicated to delivering financial outcomes that matter. TIAA CREF, created to serve, built to perform. Learn more at TIAA.org. And by the Poetry Foundation, publisher of Poetry Magazine, now available on iOS devices. Subscriptions available at PoetryMagazine.org. Produced by Joy Biles, assisted by Kathy Roach. Be well, do good work, and keep in touch.
Mondays are back at the Diamond Park Aquatic Center. Now open Monday through Friday from 6 a.m. until 8 p.m., Saturdays 9 a.m. until 6 p.m., and Sundays noon until 6 p.m. Fall schedules are now available online at juno.org/park/diamond park. For more information, call Diamond Park Aquatic Center at 586-2782.
You are listening to Juno Afternoon on KTOO. It's the Thursday, October 8th edition of the show, 27 minutes past the hour. Jeff Brown's at the board. He is the producer and engineer of the show. I'm Joan Pardis, your Thursday host. And our next guest is Carl Reese. He's the president of the Juno Alpine Club, and he's here to chat about the club and the activities for this month. Hey, Carl, welcome to the show.
Hi, thanks.
So let's start at the very beginning. I've heard about the Juno Alpine Club. I have friends who have participated in events, but can you tell me a little bit about what it is?
Well, it's an organization that, you know, I haven't been around when it was all started, but, you know, it was actually started by two people, a family that was doing a bunch of things in, I believe, the 90s, early 90s. And they did some presentations at the Glacier, you know, the Friday night thing. They were saying, "Oh, this is what we did." And a bunch of people came up to them, and this would be Kim and Barb Turley, and came up to them and said, "Hey, we want to do all this stuff." And so they started this club, and it was basically, the idea was that anybody that was, you know, basically all ages could come and do various activities with the club. And the activities have been anywhere from climbing Mount McGinnis in the winter to easy hikes in the evening on Thursdays. And we tend to shoot for a wide range, and we have a calendar that's online, and we just try to attract people, basically so that people can have an opportunity to get involved in this stuff. Maybe they don't know anybody that does stuff they want to do, or maybe they don't know where they're going, or both, or whatever.
Or they just want the camaraderie of...
Yeah, it's all of that, yeah.
Right. And so every month you get together and you pick the trips for that month. Is that true?
True, yeah. Oh. Or pretty much, you know. Yeah, about once a month.
Yeah. And so the trips this month are Mount Jumbo on this Saturday.
Correct.
And the other one is?
Herbert Glacier.
Okay, and when is that?
That's a week from Saturday.
Okay, so they usually happen Thursday evening and Saturday?
Well, they usually happen, like, the Thursday evening ones, those will be in the summer because, you know, we have light in the summer to do stuff.
Yeah.
Sometimes we'll do things in the evening in the winter or fall at the rock dump, just get together and practice.
Uh-huh.
But most stuff's on Saturday, and we'll do it on Saturday because if we can also kind of punt to Sunday if the weather's a little bit better that day.
Oh, I see.
And so, but we'll almost always put it on a Sunday just because – on a Saturday, excuse me, just because that works better.
Okay.
And,
so let's take this Saturday for an example. So you're going up Mount Jimbo, okay, which is a – you know, it's a walk. So if you've never done Mount Jimbo, like the Juneau Alpine Club, when I hear it, I go, oh, is this going to be technical? Are these people going to be billy goats? Is it going to be too fast, too slow? So what if you're somebody who's listening and says, oh, man, I've always wanted to go up Mount Jimbo. Are they the right person for the club to say, yeah, come on?
Well, typically, yeah. I mean, you have to be able to go up Mount Jumbo. You have to be physically capable of climbing it. But there's 1,000 people in town that have done it, and 1,000 more.
Right. And when you're talking about climbing, you're not really talking about ropes.
Yeah, this is a hike.
Yeah, this is just a hike.
So you have to be in reasonably physical condition. And if you were doing it this Saturday, it's going to be slippery and muddy and all that. But yeah, that's exactly who should. And you know, there's. I believe that's JunoAlpineClub.wordpress.com, and there's contact information. We have a Facebook page, and there's information on that as to who to contact, because each activity has a trip leader. And in terms of what you were addressing as far as are you the right person, one of the reasons we have a trip leader is because sometimes we're going up Mount Jumbo. Sometimes it's something really – Mount Jumbo is, you know, it's a long day. Especially in the mud. But it's not technical. It's not anything like that. Sometimes we do some more technical stuff. Sometimes it's just really easy.
Mm-hmm.
But the trip leader is supposed to sort of ask some questions. Like, if you want to go, you have to call that person and say, I'm interested. And then you can ask them questions. And that trip leader is supposed to say, hey, you know, is this really for you? And with Mount Jumbo, most often, it is, you know, unless you're in pretty good shape.
Right. If you want to do the slog in the rain, go.
Yeah, exactly.
And then Herbert Glacier, it's, you know, a 5-mile bike ride out. And then my question would be like, then you're going to climb, or is it still more?
Well, we would probably be mostly just hiking around. There's some place, just taking a look, taking some pictures. It's not going to be, we're not going to be dragging out. We're not climbing up the glacier or anything, probably. Unless for some reason everybody that calls me wants to do that, and nobody, then maybe we will.
Right, exactly.
But,
so it's all based on the group that's.
It is a little. Mm-hmm. And, well, they're actually very much so.
Okay, great. And so if people want to find out about this, they could like your Facebook page, they could go to the website.
Mm-hmm.
And so the Facebook page would be, so you could call the troop leader and say, the trip leader, and you say, I want to go to Mount Jumbo, and then if it's, you know, really not great weather on Saturday, that trip leader would make the call, and they would either post it on Facebook or call everybody and just say, we're going to do it some other time or Sunday or something along those lines. Because you were saying that if the weather's really bad, you know, especially for a jumbo.
Yeah, well, typically that's correct. And they would, if it was being either postponed or canceled, it may not even necessarily, because we don't put the times when these things start. We don't put this because we really do want people to call the person first. And so if there's four people, usually I'll just text them and say, can we do this tomorrow?
Right.
And I'll put, you know, you can put that on Facebook too.
Mm-hmm.
That's not hard. But yeah, that's how it works.
Okay. Sounds
and
great.
That's one of the reasons, among others, that we want people to call the person first.
Right. No, it sounds, yeah, not only for the logistics, but it sounds like it's really kind of like a one-on-one thing that, you know, not that you would be one-on-one with the leader, but that kind of like a personal, it's not just, oh, show up at 10 o'clock and whoever's there. It's more, let's get this together. Let's see who's, you know, the right mix for this particular climb or hike and so on and so forth.
Yeah, there are a few where we do that. If it's something really that we pretty much figure anybody can do, we will put it on the calendar. It's at 6, show up right then, and then you can show up and have no idea whether there's going to be one person or 20. And that's
right.
And you don't, like, climb up the road at Eagle Crest, you know, the one that goes up to the, you know, we've done that in the evening.
Right.
Well, you don't have to really gauge people out for that. They just show up in the evening and walk up there to the top and take some pictures, and it's fun.
Yeah, that's right. And you were talking about there's a meeting in November, like if people want to, is there?
I'm not sure if that's on the calendar, and there should be. And it should be on the calendar.
I think there might be. I went to your website. I'm not 100% sure.
And I'm not either, and I'm the one that put it together.
Okay. So someone check and let us know.
And if there isn't, I'll put it on there.
But that's the way to go.
Yeah, exactly. That will. And you can go to the meetings, because I think the meetings are usually in – well, we rotate them around town, so they're not always the same. They're either – they're usually at pizza places.
Okay.
And like Island Pub or Pizzeria Roma or what's the place? We'll go to McGivney's out in the valley. And we kind of do that, like circle around,
mm-hmm.
so that people that live out in the valley don't have to drive to Douglas and vice versa.
Yeah, that sounds great. That sounds great. All right, well, Carl, thanks for coming by. If you want to find out about what's going on with the Juneau Alpine Club, check it out. Do a search online or go to their Facebook page. And this Saturday, if you're interested in climbing Mount Jumbo, go to the website. You'll find out the trip leader's name and get a hold of him or her, and you'll be set.
Okay.
All right. Thanks for coming. We'll be right back.
From my garden, it's a snail, that's what it is. The lark up on my garden, it's a snail, that's what it is. First there is a mountain, then there is no mountain, then there is. First there is a mountain, then there is no mountain, then there is. Caterpillar sheds his skin to find a butterfly within. Caterpillar sheds his skin to find a butterfly within. First there is a mountain, then there is no mountain, then there is. First there is a mountain, then there is no mountain. Blinding sight to see as it lies on yonder hillside. Lark up on my garden, it's a snail, that's what it is. Lark up on my garden, it's a snail, that's what it is. Caterpillar sheds his skin to find a butterfly within. Caterpillar sheds his skin to find a butterfly within.
Welcome back to Juneau Afternoon on KTOO. It is 50 degrees at the airport, 51 downtown, and 49 at the Mendenhall Valley. It is going to get windy in the next couple of days. It is almost 20 to the hour. And our next guest here is Buck Willoughby from the Juneau Preschool. How are you?
I'm great, Joan. Thanks for having me in.
He's a little old for the preschool because he's one of the parents. I think he's probably president, right?
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah. Just to tell a little bit about the preschool, we have up to 20 kids a day. We offer two classes a week. There's a Monday, Wednesday, Friday class, and there's a Tuesday, Thursday class. And all the families are involved in the preschool. They have working days where they show up and work for the parent. If you're in the Monday, Wednesday, Friday class, there's about 10 for the school year. And the Tuesday, Thursday has about 7 working days. And then there's a lot of different roles. We have a registration coordinator. We have people that are in charge of some of our fundraising events. And so all the parents have a role in it as a cooperative effort. And the costs are pretty low. It's $205 per month for the 3-day-a-week class and $135 for the 2-day-a-week class. And we can enroll up to 20 kids, and we have some openings right now. So while we're still in the earlier part of our school year, we wanted to come on and just let anybody know if this sounds like a good fit for them. They can give us a call at the co-op at 586-2656. We're also on Facebook, or they can check out our website at JuneauCoopPreschool.com.
Great. So let's deal with some more of the logistics. So is it still 9:30 to 12?
Yes, it's 9 to 12.
9 to 12?
Yep.
Okay. And then you do have two professional teachers there, Mary and Rhonda?
We do. And okay. Then we have one
of the best teachers. Two of the best teachers in town.
And we have Kathleen works with Mary on the Tuesday-Thursday class.
Okay.
And, yeah, they just have an incredible wealth of knowledge with early childhood development. They're phenomenal with the kids. And being a parent, you know, we learn so much from them and just how they deal with conflict resolution and how they encourage the kids to ask questions and encourage them to explore their environment through play and really learn through playing. It's incredible.
It is pretty incredible. I'm not a graduate, but my daughter is of the Chinoco Preschool. It's a great, great, great program for early childhood.
It's a staple for the Juno community. It's been around for over 40 years. You know, our teachers just have a vast knowledge of just, you know, the programs that we have. The every day there's a new curriculum, and it really engages the kids and the parents. You know, we ask the parents to really bring their talents and their interests. And we were out crabbing the other day and caught some crab, and we brought them into the preschool, you know, taped their claws and brought them in so the kids can really see, you know, that just that natural environment that we live in.
Yeah, I'd like to see some crab in that environment. That sounds great. So, so there's a couple of spots. So if you're interested and you want some more information, give a shout at 586-2656. And then you said there's some upcoming fundraisers as well.
We do. We've got some fundraisers coming up. Colette at the Gold Tom Nick was great. Last year we started a program with her that's Take Your Kids to the Movie. It probably has a better name than that, but that's what I'm going to call it right now. But it's great. It's, you know, if you're not really too sure if you're ready to bring your kid to the movie theater, this is a very kid-friendly event. The first one of the year is going to be this Saturday, October 10th. And at 11 a.m., we have selected shorts for the kids. And then at noon, we have a feature film, Nocturna. And we'll be selling baked goods, and we'll have refreshments there for sale. And it is $5 per person, or $20 per household. So if you come in, you have a, you know, group of five or six, you know, it's not going to cost you $30. It's just we max that out at
$20. That sounds great.
Yeah, and the lights are, you know, the lights are still kind of on. And if the kids want to get up and dance, you know, that's encouraged. It's, you know, a really open environment. And we'll do that once a month. The first one here is this Saturday, starting at 11 at the Gold Tom Nick. The next one's going to be November 14th, and another one December 12th.
That's great.
Yeah, and they're great. The kids, you know, love them, and you know, pretty good movies. Yeah.
I'm sure they are. And then what about the classic Zippity Doodah fundraiser?
Yeah, so then we do a Zippity Doodah fundraiser. That'll be November 7th at the Northern Lights Church. It's from 11 to noon, and that's a concert, a family friendly concert, and the kids get up and do some performances. It's really cute. It's a suggested donation of $5 for adults and $3 for children.
Right. And, you know, we were remiss in saying that the Juno Co-op Preschool is based out of the Northern Lights Church.
It is. It is based out of the Northern Lights Church in the Federal Flats. It's 400 West 11th Street. And, it's been there for a long time, and it's really set up well. And, yeah, we're excited to, you know, maybe fill these last few spots. You know, it's a great event. This is not, it's not daycare, you know, it's just part time. It's from 9 to noon, and we really expect our parents to be involved and in many different ways. So, you know, if you're wondering if it's maybe right for you, give us a call, 586-2656. Check out our website. You know, all the parents are more than happy to talk to you and just tell you a little bit about the program. One of our other fundraisers that's a little bit away yet, but it's our annual pie sale that we'd be doing the 2 days before Thanksgiving at the Foodland IGA. We set up a table there, and we have all different pies that people, all the parents, bake and bring in, and they're about $20 a pie.
Yeah. And, I'm nodding my head. I remember that. And
yeah.
It's good stuff.
Yeah. Sometimes you're not a very good baker. That's an easy way to get a nice homemade baked pie for a great price and to support a great, you know, local program. I mean, we're a local nonprofit. We're funded entirely by our fundraising. And I do want to mention, too, that we do have assistance available to low-income families. If, you know, if maybe you can't afford that, there is a simple application you could fill out and apply for that if it's money that would maybe restrict you from checking it out.
That sounds great. All right. Well, Buck, thanks for coming by. If you're interested, give him a shout at 586-2656.
Exactly.
And we're going to take a short break, and we'll be right back.
Thank you so much.
This is Bird Note. The sight of a heron standing in a marsh, stabbing at prey in the shallows, is familiar in many places. But a few heron species shun the daylight to hunt their prey by night. One of these nocturnal specialists, the black-crowned night heron, is found across much of the U.S. It also inhabits all the continents except Australia and Antarctica. It's even found in island groups as remote as Hawaii, making the black-crowned night heron the most widespread heron on Earth. Such a far-flung range suggests highly successful adaptation. Feeding at night, black-crowned night herons are freed from competing with the more numerous day-hunting herons. They're also very opportunistic feeders. While fish are often primary prey, the herons will consume everything from earthworms to clams to eggs of nesting birds and refuse at landfills. They also have a flexibly long breeding season, which may enable them to thrive across such a broad geographic range. Since they are high on the food chain, found over much of the world, and nest in colonies, black-crowned night herons can tell us a great deal about the health or contamination of our environment. Today's show was produced with support from the Bird Note Pacific Flyway Circle. Thank you, donors, for your generous support.
Juneau.
Ketchikan. We come from different places.
Sitka.
Haines. We come to different conclusions.
Half empty.
Half full. But when we live united, we can make a real difference in the building blocks of life.
Children succeed in school. Families gain financial stability. The health of our neighbors improves, and suddenly, so do our communities.
Real change won't happen without you.
Help make a difference in your community by supporting United Way of Southeast Alaska. Learn more at UnitedWaySeak.org.
Support for programming comes from Alaska Litho, providing print and media service with personal customer service in Juneau for over 65 years. Information at alaskalitho.com.
Hello, it is 12 minutes to the hour. It is Juneau afternoon here at KTLO. In the studio is Nancy DeCharney to talk about Arts Up.
Hey, we got some stuff.
Nancy. Well, I want to start with there's that one-day sale at the Brown Boots store. It's the special Halloween Perseverance Theater costume sale. It's one day that's Saturday at 9 a.m. Brown Boots is open all year round, but this is the costume sale.
And we know what's coming, so you better get ready.
Boo.
Yeah, like
something
that.
Along those lines. Yeah. I live in the flats. I know about Halloween.
You guys do know about Halloween in the flats.
All right.
Attest to that. All right.
Let's talk about what's coming up before Halloween.
7:30 tonight, Empty Chair Project out at UAS Egan Lecture Hall. Have these guys been on? No. Within the Silence. So as you all probably are aware of the Empty Chair sculpture that's up there and the story, the history in Juneau. So the presentation about that is happening at 7:30 out at the Egan Lecture Hall. And I must note that that sculpture won Juneau a national award for best public art. So
let's talk about that, though. Tell me a little bit of that backstory, just in case somebody's listening.
Well, I don't remember the year. I should go to this because I don't remember all the details. But it was when there were Japanese folks were being sent to internment camps, and there was a student who was the valedictorian of the class who was Japanese, and he was sent off to be an internment mm-hmm. camp. So they had a little graduation for him before he left, but then they left a chair at the regular graduation for him.
Hmm.
So it was his empty chair, and this sort of commemorates that piece of history in Juneau. So,
beautiful.
Yeah, it is actually, and it was his classmates, I believe, that put this together. At 9 p.m., there is Abioki Karaoke at McGivney's Sports Bar and Grill, and also at the Alaskan LZs have an open mic. Now, Friday is Bing Day. What is Bing Day? Well, you know, M.K. McNaughton has been doing her Grit series where she does a portrait every week. And this week, her portrait was of Bing Carrillo and his dog, Mac, who are huge volunteers in many, many things, particularly over at the Arts Council. But they help Bing and Mac help with a lot of things for different arts groups. And we just thought, what the heck? We'll have Bing Day to come and have everybody look at the portrait, which is of Bing and Mac, and we'll have cookies and some refreshments and stuff. So come at noon and see Bing's portrait and have a nice time with him.
Yeah, it's great.
At 5:30 p.m., there's an a cappella workshop out at the UAS Egan Room. They have an a cappella group coming, The Exchange. We'll be doing a concert at 9 p.m. The Traveler Duo is from 6 to 9 p.m. at Rockwell. Learn to Skate Time out at the Treadwell Arena. It's from 6:30 to 7:30. And let's see what else we got. Oh, Brad and Friends is out at McGivney's at 10 p.m. On Saturday, the Tongass Woodturners are back in business. They meet at the Thunder Mountain High School Woodshop and work on wood projects. And now you wanted to talk. You already talked about the Brown Boots costume sale. We don't want to miss that. That starts at 9 and goes to 1.
Okay, 9.
Yeah, don't miss that. Get up early, get the stuff. There's an Extra Tough 5K and 1 mile fun run. Starts at Riverbend Elementary School, and it is a NAMI Juno thing. 9 a.m. for registration, and the run starts at 10. It's second Saturday. That means the Farmers and Crafters Market at the Airport Shopping Mall runs from 10 to 3. And it's Saturday mornings at the movies at the Goldtown Nickelodeon. They're going to show from 11 to 1:30 kids films, which are great.
And it's a fundraiser for the Juno Co-op Preschool. We just chatted with them.
Yeah, so, and I can't remember the names of the films that are happening, but they sounded
like Nocturna.
Nocturna, that's right.
And some shorts.
And then from 11 to 6 p.m., there's a Bras and Bucks drive at Bustin' Out Boutique. Have you talked to Hollis?
Have not.
Oh, okay. Well, she's doing a fundraiser to benefit women who've been saved from the sex trade. And so the money that's donated goes towards helping women form their own businesses. And,
hey.
Yeah, so, right. Yeah, so 11 to 6. Bustin' Out Boutique is in the Senate building, so go visit that. Real Rock 10, it's a film that's a benefit for the Rock Dump. That's at Centennial Hall from 7 to 8 p.m. UAS has Greg Guillard. I'm not sure I'm saying the name correctly at all. He's a Cajun author and photographer, also in the Egan Lecture Hall at 7. There is Read Local from 7 to 9. This is a celebration of a variety of authors and books. It's put on by the UAS and the library together. It's at COPA, and Ernestine Hayes will be there, and I can't remember who. Frank Seuss, who's the Alaska Poet Laureate or Writer Laureate, will be there. Sounds like it'll be a really
literary evening. Yes, with coffee and ice cream.
With coffee and ice cream, of course. But Sunday, the big news is we have John Sebastian at 7 p.m. We are so fortunate to have this gentleman in town. He just happened to be touring the state and have an empty day, and he and his wife were going to be taking the ferry out of town on a vacation and said, what the heck, let's do a concert.
Okay, so I know who he is, but people who are listening and saying,
may not
is,
know
who
is John Sebastian.
Who is he?
Well, do you believe in magic and Summertime in the City? And I mean, just you name it, John Sebastian probably wrote it. And
Love and Spoonful, right?
Yes, Love and Spoonful, but lots of things before and after that. He is a Rock and Roll Hall of Famer. He's played with everybody. Basically,
so
played everybody.
Is he going to be up there with a guitar, or is he going to have a band?
He's currently mostly doing harmonica work, I think, but with his guitar as well. And also, he just is a raconteur. He tells stories. He grew up surrounded by musicians from the 40s and 50s.
So he doesn't have any good stories, right?
No, he's never, doesn't know anything about anybody. He played in Woodstock. It's going to be at the Jack, and I have the premium seats are sold out, but we do still have seats, the general admission seats. So I really encourage people to come. This is, you will recognize the songs for sure.
Okay. So if you get general seating, how early do you have to get there?
Oh, not so bad. Not so bad. I mean, the Jack is actually, we're finding to be a very nice small concert. It's like a little house concert type of thing, but we'll, there'll be beer and wine there, and just make a nice little Sunday evening of the whole thing. So I hope you'll come out. Give us a call at the Jack to get your tickets. And you know that we have this deal where if you buy four tickets, it's you can get four tickets, $20 a piece. So that's not bad.
No, sounds good.
Yeah, bring a friend and come have this. Now, Monday is Eagle Crest Early Bird Season Pass Sale Day. So it's going to be great. They've already had so much snow in Fairbanks. I think we're going to have a good winter. So as an opportunity to get your ticket at a nice price on Monday, you call the CBJ people or skijuno.com. And it's the start of the Juno Jazz and Classics Cabaret Workshop with Barney McClure.
Yes. And
that will go on through the week, and then there'll be a performance next week.
But if, let's go back to the Barney McClure Cabaret. I saw it for the first time, I don't know, I've been living under the rock last year. He comes every year, and uh-huh. He arranges, you know, the big secret for performers is the arrangement, because, you know, you need to go within your range.
Yes.
My range is
limited. Mine is like here and there.
My range is non-existent. But let's say somebody's listening and they say, I want to be in it. Is it too late?
No, I don't think so. Just call them at Jazz and Classics, which is 463-3378, or you can get to it through our
right.
Because
you could be
art.
In it, or you could
watch
it.
You could have your good friend be in it and go watch them, whatever, all that sort of stuff. It's a really fun event because it is.
It's really fun.
Yeah, it's really fun to see people that you didn't know could do these things, doing these things. It's fun.
I'll tell you, Juno has these pockets.
Well, I think that oftentimes what happens is people don't know themselves that they have this talent, and then they just get bold and think, okay, I'm going to do it this year, and all of a sudden, there it is, a new star is born. So
In Juno.
Move over,
Barbara
Streisand. Yes, forgot it. Let's see. We've also got on Tuesday, let's see, there's the Canvas has a whole bunch of really nice classes going on. So you feel like getting into stained glass or sculpture or oil painting or all sorts of things. They're doing that right now.
Just right now? You mean like when it's
mm-hmm.
getting dark,
when you, yeah,
like
you
rapidly,
mm-hmm.
and it's going to rain for the next...
It's going to hurricane for the next...
It is going to rain. And I'm like, ha-ha, 45 miles per hour. Give me a break.
Yeah, that's going to happen.
Little 48 can crumble, but we'll be fine.
We'll be fine. We'll be painting. We'll be having oil painting. Anyway, so it's a really fun weekend. It feels like there's a weekly old-time music jam at the Alaskan Hotel. There's a ski film bar night at Louie's on Wednesday. These are things that are going on. So we will, I just hope to see everybody at John Sebastian.
Yeah, sounds fun, Sunday.
Yeah, Sunday, be a nice evening. That's pretty much what's going on until next Thursday.
Okay, so there's a lot. There's a simulation at Egan on Friday at 7. There is that lovely celebration, Alaska Book Week, with Ernestine Hayes and her fabulous writing, 7 o'clock Saturday night at Copa, and then
and
John
cream.
Sebastian,
mm-hmm.
and Copa ice cream. Anyway, we are going to wrap up the show. Nancy, thank you so much
for having me.
It's
good to be here.
Yeah, and we're going to go right to the weather. We were talking about it. There's a hurricane. I'm not sure if they're really calling it a hurricane anymore. It was a hurricane. By the time it gets here, I think it's some kind of tropical impression or something, which is not really true. But tonight, rain in the evening, then chance of rain late, lows around 49, northeast wind 10 to 15 miles per hour. The real event is tomorrow. Windy, rain likely in the morning, then rain heavy at times in the afternoon, highs around 55, northeast wind 20 to 30 miles per hour, wind gusts up to 45 miles per hour. In the afternoon, Friday night, rain, and Saturday, rain. They're talking about 3 to 5 inches from Friday into Sunday. So that is the weather report right now. It's 50 at the airport, 51 downtown, 49 in the Mendenhall Valley. And tomorrow, join Andy Klein, always fun to join Andy Klein, about a film fest and many other things. All right, we're going to wrap it up. All Things Considered is next.
This is KTOO Juneau. We broadcast.